Hey there, loyal listeners. As you know, the Top Games podcast is made possible by Hardcore Gaming 101's Patreon supporters, who help keep this show alive by donating as little as $2 each month. If you were to join them in doing that, you would not only help keep the lights on at HG 101 Towers, you'd also get access to our super secret Patreon RSS feed, which is full of ad-free versions of this podcast with exclusive bonus game rankings. Here's a taste of what you've been missing.
We should maybe get to the point on what the hell Police Knots is.
Mankind creates its first space station. They decide to put five policemen up there. One of them is in an accident, never to be found again until his cryo ball, which was with him, is miraculously discovered.
It's all about how a guy from 2010 is struggling to adapt to the year 2040. So he remembers the good old days when everybody smoked cigarettes, like regular old cigarettes, and just puff, puff, puff. These jerk-offs are out here smoking non-combustible cigarettes like wieners.
That's a Kojima character detail right there.
Yeah.
If only he swallowed a carton of cigarettes in 2010 and then regurgitated it in 2045. Go to patreon.com/HG101 and pledge a couple bucks. That's patreon.com/HG101. Act now and be a hero.
Some, this is painfully obvious, but hardcore gaming means it ain't for the novices. The main source to brain train your knowledge and lay maintain with a course aimed at colleges. To HG 101 we give the honor, thanks to Kirk Alada, Xerxes to host it proper, as well as Satanga, Cal and Bobinator, Ogre Hart and others discuss and discover all the 47,000 games, and when they rate them, you can bet it's scientifically locked in position. Speaking of which, no system is obscure, and look, they wrote a book about it, go out and cop yours.
Hello and welcome to HardcoreGaming101.net's Top 47,858 Games of All Time podcast, where we objectively, definitively, and scientifically rank the games that you nominate. My name is Xerxes, and I'm the show's main host and producer, and on this podcast we have three rules. Rule 1, all rankings are final, official, and scientifically accurate. Rule 2, you can nominate one game at a time via 5-star review on iTunes or Stitcher. Those are the ones we try to get to first. You can also go to bit.ly/rankthisplease. and add a game to the slush pile and cross your fingers. We make no guarantees on those. Rule number 3, you can nominate games that have already been nominated, just don't nominate games you've already ranked. See the master list for yourself. It's at bit.ly/47kgames. That's bit.ly/47kgames.
Dogs Bower. Hey, Dogs Bower. Hey, Dogs Bower. Hey, Dogs Bower.
Oh, I have a bad feeling about this.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to our show. This episode, we're going to be talking about a little game called Jet Set Radio, or Jet Grind Radio, depending on which region you were located in back on June 29th, 2000. But that would be Japan specifically. I don't know when it came out elsewhere. It was published by Sega for the Sega Dreamcast, and it was developed by Smilebit.
Which Smilebit. I learned used to be called AM6. I believe it was. So one of the AMs.
Yeah. And you're like, you know what would really turn this outfit around? We're going to call ourselves Smilebit. We're going to make Dreamcast games. And it's going to set the world afire.
That was literally their mission, by the way. They were instructed basically by Sega. Like, all right, Smilebit or whatever you want to call yourselves. You're going to make Dreamcast games. Original Dreamcast games for the Dreamcast. Rather than, I guess, like arcade ports for the Dreamcast. Don't know. That's what they did.
Yeah. Who's with me to talk about Jet Set Radio?
I am K-A-L. That's right. Sound it out.
I'm Tex Albert. My name's too long to be spelled out right now.
Gotta have
and,
your cool,
what's
like...
Your, what are your yeah. extreme late 90s rollerblader nicknames?
It's K-A-L.
Uh-huh.
It's pronounced K-A-L. It is abbreviated.
Mine was... XX capital X text Albert 666 capital XXX.
God damn it.
This is good.
I can barely
Xerxes kind of works because that's probably
Xerxes,
when about,
yeah.
It's about when I came up with that name. It's probably the late night. Yeah. So, okay. The next thing, question I'm going to ask is, what is your preferred title? Do you like Jet Set or Jet Grind Radio?
I forgot it was called Jet Grind, to be honest. The thing is, grinding in this game is actually kind of a pain in the ass, but the music is pretty great, so I guess Jet Set Radio wins by default.
Jet Set because it rhymes.
Yeah, I'm on the Jet Grind, because it just, the nonsense of it appeals to me.
The grind pod is kind of more accurate to what you literally do in the game. Jet Set Radio in the game is just the radio station that you're listening to.
Jet Set is like this very, like, to me, it sounds like a very, like, 1950s kind of not cool anymore term. It's like, I'm part of the Jet Set. We're all flying around and hanging out with, like, Dean Martin or something. I don't know.
Yeah, also, that applies to, like, rich socialites who can afford, like, playing tickets on a weekly basis, which isn't really what the characters in this game do.
Well, no. And this sort of thing would ironically have called themselves something like that. Like, you know, the Jetters or something as like a...
I don't know. I think they would. It would be something more like what you were saying is like lowercase x, capital X, lowercase x. I mean, so this game, it's about some miscreants in a crazy kind of future city, but it looks suspiciously
it's
like...
called Tokyo... it's like a city you know, but not quite.
Not exactly, yo. Right?
Isn't like the Toe Pod of Tokyo just mean like city or something? I think it like literally means like town or city or something. Like I think it's a joke that works in Japanese.
And it sure works everywhere else too. So it's like a like futurist. Dickish police state-ish type thing where you stick it to the man by committing sick crimes of vandalism, and I'm not really sure what you're accomplishing, but there's a very like Rupon-esque in police guy who gets really angry about it.
It's really great.
You're draining public funds because these guys you spray paint like one wall and they send the SWAT team after.
They do.
I love that. That's one of the best parts of the game. They're like, get those kids, damn it, break out the tear gas. And it's like, god damn, they just put like some paint on a wall.
Yeah, it's a very serious business.
I mean, so I think it's supposed to be funny because Japan obviously takes that sort of crime a bit more seriously. You know, like if you deface like public stuff, everyone will be like, this person right here should be put in jail for sure, 100%.
Yeah,
you know, this is a place that's got like all the really nice clean vending machines like literally everywhere, and nobody or very few people like vandalize them because it's just like,
right,
why would you vandalize our nice vending machine?
There's very little vandalism in Japan.
Yeah,
it's one of the things, it's part of their like community spirit. It's like, don't make trouble for other people, someone's gonna have to clean that up.
Yeah,
meanwhile you go to like Portugal or Italy or something and the cops are tagging stuff. You know, it's like, it just like you can't, it's like it's hopeless. Like
cops rule, man.
it'd be like the Carabinieri or something, like tagging a church. You know, it's like, I'm not joking. It's really, they do a lot of really crappy graffiti in Italy.
But yes, it is like the, I don't know what you call it. What is that? I don't know, a stupid musical about gangs and stuff. Anyway, point is, it's got those sort of like rules where you're in a gang. And if you tag other gang stuff, then you own their territory. Nobody whips out guns and shoots each other. It's just like,
no,
they tagged that wall. Guess they win. Like that's,
it's a bit like GTA if everybody forgot their guns, but brought these spray cans. So that's all they have.
It's a very gamified logic. Whereas if you compare this to another graffito simulator, Mark Echo's Getting Up, right? We did that one, right? Remember that?
Oh man, I forgot it.
Yeah, we had good things to say about that game.
It's good.
It's not bad, yeah. So that one's like a much more... It still takes place in a futuristic police state where the only crime is art, and they're cracking down. But it's a much more like normal type idea where you're an artist and your goal is to like get known and get your art up there. Yeah.
But you like
and become famous. And there's other, like, you see this in, like, the old, like, PS2 Warriors game. They do some graffiti tagging stuff. But this one's very gamified. It's just, like, a territory claiming mechanism. And it's also combined with, like, some, like, Tony Hawk-esque rollerblade stunt work.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much it. Yeah. It's, like, avoid the cops, tag stuff, and do cool tricks.
Like,
and
to listen clear the to level, you got to tag everything in the level, which is helpfully marked on your map for the most part when you pause the game,
right?
And that's all you do. You everything else in between that is don't get killed because you actually have a life bar.
The cops will just shoot you
straight up. Like even like in the first level, I believe they will shoot at you.
Yeah, like, you're like, you're tagging up like a bus garage or something, or like a bus stop.
Yeah, it's like a major bus like depot.
And yeah, and there's like just the cops swarm in, like the riot squad comes in, and they're just shooting at you.
They just with their truncheons, and they just beat the crap out of you.
And the whole time, you're like listening on your cool like 90s headphones to your like sick underground graffiti rollerblade gang.
Your name is like Beats or Gum or
who's the Shoes. who's the DJ of that? It's like,
is it Dr. K?
Dr. K. I wonder if that's something an ecstasy like that. Reference. Is that an ecstasy reference?
Yeah, he's essentially the narrator of the game.
He's the main
it's like he's kind of telling your story. Yeah.
You can't tell me they weren't influenced by the Warriors in this, because that's like basically the Warriors. It's like they've got Lynn Thigpen is the DJ who like narrates, who somehow is like knows everything that's happening in New York City, like block by block, knows exactly where the Warriors are. And is like spinning Motown hits or something. It's like really, you know, but it's like, it's gotta be, but I love everything about it. Cause I love that.
It's that really, yeah. It's like this nice, like synchronization between it. Like it's a dream logic almost, right? Like it's just like,
exactly.
This makes sense. Even if it shouldn't, it doesn't work, but it's like, it feels right to have this person narrate like that. Pretty cool. He mostly like narrates the plot. It's a little weird because I don't know if it's just I was playing the recent comparatively PC re-release, which is got a better resolution, comfortable like Xbox 360 controls for your like computer, you know, pad. Dreamcast controls work just fine for this, but 361 on the PC means you can control the camera with the right stick, which
That's nice.
It's a nice improvement, I'll tell you that.
I got to try that out because I haven't played it since it was on the I own it for the PC and I forgot that I had
actually
it.
I forgot I owned it too, and then it was on the bill and I was like, hold on, I sometimes just buy Sega games when they're on special, I'm gonna and I did, I had bought it, so I was like, cool.
Does it have all the original music?
It has 99% of it. It's missing one song, I don't know, is it like Tappy Feet, Groovy Feet?
Does the music just turn you on?
It's a good
the
soundtrack.
Music just turns me on.
I think that one
noted this.
There.
Even if you have the HD edition, you can just mod that song in. So someone already fixed that for you. It's like Crazy Taxi. I mean, officially,
okay, I wasn't
it may
sure
not have
this
the music.
One, I saw someone complaining about like music and stuff, and I was like,
"This is like, I love it." As an old man now, I'm very nostalgic for this whole era because it's like it felt like the future was now, and now is like the year 1999. Which sounds very, like, apocalyptic and cool.
This one is really interesting because it's from a weird, like, aborted plotline for the future in a lot of ways. Since this game was 2000, it was, you know, this, like, bleeding edge, like, funky, groovy, like, brightly lit punk sort of thing. But we kind of did, like, a hard angle into, like, emo and that sort of, like, thing in terms of pop culture. Like, it was a really sideways shift to, like, a kind of grungy sort of thing, whereas this is like, no, let's be funky and groovy and everything's gonna be full of colors. And
yeah, it's a very 90s future.
Yeah,
the radical 90s just extended and continued and never quite ended.
I believe that like the kids who are like recovering the stuff like as a retro style are calling it Y2K as like the art style or the aesthetic value. I mean, and they're all people who are like, when I follow like a Twitter account, something like that, like Y2K artifacts or something like that. And it's all just like Y2K, like user interface design. And it's something that I never thought about, but there was like a consistent style that did sort of develop for and only existed for a little while, but it was there and it was everywhere. And it's interesting because like, it seems like the people who are promoting this now, it's like to them, it's like vaporwave, you know, it's like kitschy and lame, but in a cool way to them. Whereas to me, it still looks kind of like, that's kind of futuristic.
I definitely think
it should be noted that. Yep. So it should be noted that the game, so it's cell shaded, which was somewhat near the time. Okay. I just want to say that even in HD, when it's quote unquote just upscaled, it still looks pretty good considering the game is almost 20 years old. And it's a little bit like Killer 7 in that regard because the textures are so simple. They work quite well. Like most cars are just monochrome almost. And they could just upscale it and had a pretty decent effect based on
that. So I'm going to say you have said it cel-shaded. This is the game that came along and really put the term cel-shading as a like a thing in games because it's the Dreamcast, it's the year 2000, the PlayStation N64 can't really do this. PC gamers probably not really big into the aesthetic of what cel shading was, so Dreamcast pretty much the only thing that could do this in the year 2000, and they were like, hey, check it out, and this was like, holy crap, a game can look like that? Like, that is a whole other thing, like just the rendering technique for cel shading. You definitely can't appreciate it now because it's like a default plugin basically in Unity. Like, it's pretty basic stuff, but the cel shading in this is restrained. Like, everything is cel shaded, but there is quite a lot of texture work in there. So what you sort of call cel shading is not entirely accurate because there's lots of texture work in here. So it's it really elevates it outside of this, like, oh, it's flat, like, shaded. It's like, yeah, it is flat shaded in a lot of ways, but you know, all the characters have proper faces, lots of their clothes have actual texture detail, you know, like, it just uses it to add a little bit of extra flair to the presentation rather than
it's still, even on the Dreamcast, you look, it's one of those Dreamcast games that still looks pretty damn good for that reason. I think it's like, I don't know what it is about, like, games that were designed for the Dreamcast, right? That were made for the Dreamcast they do often still, you don't want to say hold up because they're very clearly of their time, but it's not like looking at a PS2 game. You know what I mean? Like,
well, one of the reasons is they were like, I don't know how well we can do like textures, like really like detailed texture work. So we're going to lean on like anime or cartoon. We're going to lean on quite lightweight textures and let the, you know, the models and the like fact that it does have some anti-aliasing on the system. We'll let that speak for the system. You know, we're not going to try and cram in too many textures. And I think that makes the main difference is when you upscale it, it's like, oh, it still looks pretty good. Whereas the PlayStation 2 especially was like, well, all of our textures look like murky ass, so let's just do that. So everything looks like murky ass. And
it's really like, it's, you can tell though, looking at the the HD one, it makes it really apparent. But when you're looking at, like, for example, like the cop guy, I can't remember what his name is, Onigashima or something like that. Yeah. Onigashima is like Onigashima's. That'd be great. But it's not. But like, you look at like his tie is just a texture just painted on. It looks really, that part doesn't look so good. But
it's kind of like, it still has that, like, because as you said, like Y2K is an aesthetic. This is kind of an aesthetic as well. Like low res textures on like low res models, but nice, crisp, and clear visuals. Crisp, clear always sells well in terms of like your eyes. It doesn't matter if it's like, oh, his tie is just painted on. If you're like, ah, that is a person wearing a tie, and your brain is happy to run with that. If it's like, the tie, like, moves realistically, but only sort of realistically, then your brain is already like, that's not a tie. That's a snake, weird thing that's just kind of glued on.
You're in the necktie uncanny valley, and you can't be there.
What were some of the other gang's names in this?
Oh, crap.
I always throw them together with the gang names from River City Ransom.
Yeah, there's no generic dudes and there's no frat guys, but
they're so cool visually. I can't remember.
The
Love Shockers is the least important one. They only show up like two or three times.
But they look cool and they all like dance in unison.
I like that all of them dance in unison, like all the gang.
Oh, that's
the
right.
The Love Shockers theme is they're like, they've been dumped and they're all like heartbroken, so they're gonna break your heart, like that's their,
and they all got this like reason. Ziggy Stardust looking like Ziggy Stardust like founded like a roller derby team. They look so cool.
You've got the dudes that dress in monster masks all the time. They're just like got these like weird like a Creature from the Black Lagoon kind of look. They got like this like funky like blue monster face on, and they got like the techno guys, and they're just wearing like weird hazard suits that are kind of like streamlined for skating, and they're just like, are they called the Shockers or something? I thought, but that would be too much of an overlap, so they gotta be.
Was there the noise troupe or the noise,
yeah, it might be them, or like they're the noise boys or something. I don't know. They're all introduced with like a little, like the DJ comes in and he's all like, these guys are gonna rock you up with their electric vibes, and you're like, cool.
Yeah, and like your righteous rollerblading graffiti gang is like gonna take their territory. You're gonna conquer
them all out because screw them.
You painted over our stuff. Now we gotta go.
Then you have to paint up them, which is actually the worst part of the game.
Yeah.
I hate those bits.
So before we get to that stuff, like, we should talk a little bit, like, how does this game control it? Because we've got comparison points, right? You've got Tony Hawk's here.
Not so great. It's a bit iffy. It feels a bit floaty. And to be honest, maybe it's just me because I was never great with platforming in a 3D environment, but the platforming just never feels precise.
It is a little bit weird. It's kind of like floaty, where you launch off of something and then you're just like, it's like zero gravity for a couple seconds. And you're
it feels like there's some sort of slow-mo effect where you jump into the air and then the camera spins and everything's slowed down, but that doesn't quite happen, but you still slow down for some reason.
Except for some jumps where it gives you an instant replay.
Okay, yeah, maybe that as well.
Love that.
Even if you jump precisely, depending on what version of the game you play, the camera might just decide to spin a little bit. Yeah. And suddenly you can't see your character for a couple of seconds.
It's like, hey, the cameraman's going to do tricks too. Check it out.
There is no cameraman in this game. I can't believe there's no
level. There's a
cameraman
in every game, you just don't see it.
Yeah, no, but I can't believe you don't see, like, one of your, like, friends, like, skating around with a camera, like an actual, like, 90s skate video.
Yeah.
You know, like, you got with the camera filming the tricks, but how are they filming the person with the camera filming the tricks? Another camera filming the person with the camera with the tricks!
It's just all the way down. You know, what it really was is it was Lakitu who was looking for work, but it broke his contract. So he's like, no, I cannot be, do not skate in front of any mirrors. And it will ruin me.
It was just VHS taping all your stunts.
Yeah, like, I really wish you had that, because it would make it more like authentic. But with the weird floatiness, I will describe it in a specific way, which is like, a lot of the jumps in this game, because you grind on a lot of rails, which is, I think, a fair enough thing. It's in some of the titles. But you grind on the rails, and a lot of the jumps are kind of in a way that the game actually wants you to. It launches you in a specific direction because it wants you to go here or over there. Like, there's specific angles it wants to throw you at. And it's tricky because it's not super consistent between each jump. It's more like the level has been made and they've kind of, like, the design team has gone through and said, this, you go from here to here and here to here. And they've kind of, like, made up, like, a little, like, guide themselves as to how you can flow through the level. And the game is like, okay, this is how you do it. And it doesn't like you trying to break that script.
Not like it won't work if you try to do something else. It's just like it doesn't feel right.
No, it doesn't feel right.
In the alternate reality where they made a Jet Grind Radio 2 that came out like the next year, I can imagine them solving this by having a sort of like either like a targeting thing that would show up and show you where you're going to go.
Yeah.
Or like a way of like, or maybe they could do it like a Mirror's Edge style where like the next platform you should be going to will be a different color, which would actually work really well. I'd like to think of Mirror's Edge as like taking place in the Jet Grind Radio universe.
It kind of feels like something that would be.
It does, right?
Yeah.
You're like, you're just a person who's like delivering like sandwiches and stuff, and the cops are just shooting at you, and they got helicopters out.
I kind of see where the story went. It sounds like, oh God, this guy put graffiti all over the city. Okay, everybody gets, every policeman gets a gigantic like spray can with white paint. We're just going to spray paint the entire city.
Get rid of
white.
All the graffiti by painting it white.
It's like you need like sandblast troopers coming out, like power wash and everything. But you can imagine them like doing something where it's like kind of like almost a magnetic type thing where you're like floating for a couple seconds and like a slow mo thing.
I'm glad you mentioned the magnetic stuff.
And then you should be able to just lock on to the next thing.
This game absolutely does that where you like a millimeter from a jump and it's like, too bad, loser, and you fall, which is the most unsatisfying thing when you're like, you're getting into the groove, you're jumping off rails, you're hitting the walls, you're grinding on the walls. There's like a few bits where you're actually supposed to grind on a wall and jump to the other side, like to another wall, like a ninja, like shinobi or something. You're like, hop, hop, hop. But it's so specific about it that if you don't do it exactly right, if you fall a tiny bit short, the game is not like, you know what, you make it anyway. No. It'll be like, fall to your doom, loser. And it will do it a lot. And there's quite a few bits in the game where you're actually up quite high, so you'll fall quite far, take a little bit of damage. And then, like, in the ultimate insult, you actually have to go to an elevator, hop onto the elevator, and the game will take you back up. And it's like, what? Really? Come on! But it does feel rewarding to learn the levels because you do learn what they were trying to get you to do. And then you do get that kind of like, you know, that racing track kind of game, like, you know, where you're like, all right, it's this turn, it's that turn, right. This jump, I'm going to spray that, I'm spraying this. Like, you kind of get that
course
feel.
Built up. It's just, yeah, you think it's going to be like Katamari Damacy or something where, like, you have to learn the level and then you're going to be able to do, like, okay, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do this and do this. And by this point, I should be at this size. And then I'll be able to, like, especially when you get to, like, the final stage where it's like you got to roll up everything. But in this game, it's not really like you just have to. Once you understand what you're doing, that's what you're going to do. And it's the good thing is that, like, the stuff they want you to do is fun. It's like it's definitely not more rewarding to,
like, it's almost universally, like, every track in this is pretty killer, except I think a couple in the American soundtrack I didn't love, but you know, most of the sounds is pretty great. So even when you're like, this is frustrating, the music coming through is like, all right, but I'm still jamming, I'm still feeling this track, this song. You get to pick your own character. There's several characters. Little bit of a complaint. Basically, some of the characters are just awful. Because there's, like, each character has, like, three stats, and some characters basically can carry almost no paint and have, like, almost no health. And it's like, well, what the hell was the point of that?
Who's the good character?
I'm trying to remember, because I know that I found that the American girl who comes across during the story, she's got a pretty good balance. The default character, I don't think his name is Beat, but it's something like that.
I think it might actually be Beat.
I'm trying to think, because there's, in The World Ends With You, the cool skater guy is called Beat, and I'm like, are they both called Beat? Probably. I guess. They're all called Beat. B-E-A-T, not B-E-E-T. It'd be funny if his name was Beat, but it's not. No, like, he's pretty good, but if you pick the wrong character, you will just find that the level breaks almost, and it's like, ugh, I don't have enough paint again! Because you have to collect paint cans in order to spray paint the level up. And there's a little quick time event for some of the painting things, and it can get annoying because later on in the game, the obstacles that come at you will actually interrupt you, like, really, like, heavily. So you're, like, spraying stuff, and then you get shot by these jerks with jetpacks, so you have to run away, and there's nothing you could do about these jerks with jetpacks shooting you constantly. I gotta tell you, the end of the game is incredibly frustrating. The last, like, there's like three or four levels towards the end, and half of those levels are just so annoying. They're just not fun in the way that the game feels like it wants to be peppy and fun. And I just had I got a lot of frustrations towards the end of this game. It was very, very annoying.
Yeah, it's, you know, it doesn't control great exactly at times. There's, like, points, I think, where some of the stages get, like, really narrow kind of corridor type things, and that's not
some
fun.
Like, some of the stages are linked to other stages and stuff, yeah. Especially later on in the game where you have to go connecting stages, because the game basically connects three stages to make, like, a mega stage that you have to complete. Right. It's, like, sort of your proof that you're good at the game.
It's just also, like, there's something really frustrating about the, like, tagging stuff when you're being chased by, like, 1,000 Dobermans.
Yeah,
and they're just, like,
really
dogs
annoying.
Are ripping you apart, and you're like, I've got to finish this tag. I've got to... It's not...
And, like, some of them, fun. You can, like, there's the helicopters, which you can actually grind on rails and spray the front of the helicopter, and then the helicopter crashes. That's great! It's so funny, because you're
killing
like, fight
dozens.
The power!
killing the people.
Killing two evil pilots as well as, like, the family you crushed.
Yeah.
You skate straight through people's houses, I think.
Yeah, you break through a house in one level.
Which means the Dobermans chase you through the house.
They could attack the people. They are out of control.
They're nuts. You dare say this is, like, you know, very over-policing this graffiti menace.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, because one of my favorite parts in this game is the level towards the end of the original set, like the chain before you go to America. You go to play some extra levels in America. That's what happens. Where the detective gets so frustrated, he's like, he calls up, because you get to hear him, like, call in the various things. He calls up and he's just like, I don't care what happened. Send in the tanks. And then freaking tanks roll up throughout the level to, like, kick your skating asses. And
I love, like, the idea that, like, yeah, rollerblade graffiti gangs are such a problem. They've got, like, an Interpol officer assigned to, like, just chase them all over the globe.
And they just, like, call in, like, the actual, like, Japanese defense military to, like, yeah. Get rid of this problem skaters on the sidewalk.
They're the worst. They're not following any of society's rules. They're monsters.
But if you don't chain your level right, then there'll be, like, a tank looking right at one of the things you gotta spray.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, oh, good. Now I'm gonna get shot, like, six times trying to finish this damn graffiti. So you're really supposed to have gone to that area first so that the area you end up at is not full of tanks aiming at you. It's this kind of, like, it's clever and fun, but at the same time, sometimes it just rubs you, grinds you the wrong way. And you're like, ah, why did you do that? Why did you mess up such a cool thing? My last note before we rank it is, unfortunately, even though the PC version is a PC version, all the graffiti, you can make your own custom graffiti, but you can't just import like a PNG or something. You have to make it in the game. And nobody wants to use the in-game system where you have to use like a joystick and select paints and stuff. Nobody's going to do that. As cool as it is to make your own graffiti, you're never going to make any as cool as the ones that you can get or unlock in the game.
Yeah.
Because there's some cool tags in there.
Yeah. I'm probably confusing this with the getting up game. But that one had like real like artists doing some of the tags, right?
I'm guessing this one did have some real artists doing the tags, just because in the credits, there's like graffiti tag artists or graffiti artists or something. So I think they at least they had some people who were not part of the core Smilebit team come in to do some of the tags.
Yeah.
So at the very least, they're kind of like pretty authentic.
I found the characters' names.
All right.
Right. So you were right. There's Beat.
Yeah.
He's 17 years old. He's he likes vinyl records.
And, wow.
Bito is he's from he must be from Tokyo-to. It doesn't say.
They're all from Tokyo-to unless said otherwise.
There's a Yo-Yo.
Right.
Who is another member of the GGs.
That's right. They're called the GGs.
Yeah,
I don't know
GGs.
What that. That made me smile.
They're like the BGs, but they're cooler.
Yeah, good game.
Yeah, he's one of the characters that like he's in a rival gang and you beat him. There's Cube, who's the American girl.
Yeah, she's pretty good.
She's got a belly button tattoo. She's from Grind City in America. Grind City must be right next to Metro City, I think. Like the Mad Gears and the GGs must have really thrown down. There's my this is it. Okay, so Gum is my eternal like late 90s crush, I think. She
problem
looks
with
like
Gum
is
she actually sucks in the game, I think.
Oh yeah, no, she does, but
she's got so much
style, man.
That's why you pick her and then she sucks and you get mad at the game because you're not playing well because her stats are bad.
You're like, you're wearing this like mini skirt that looks kind of like an apron. It might actually be an apron, but it goes all the way around and it's like very neon green. There's Corn.
Corn.
16 years old.
Is that spelled with a C or with a K?
No, it's with a C.
Okay, that's
and he's known as Tab in European and North American versions of the game. Tab, what a great name.
Yeah.
Corn is not a great name, but it's
better.
They
must have changed
Tab.
That because they would be worried about the actual Corn band with a K, I guess, being like,
yeah,
hey.
That's what I was wondering.
I can't remember why they had to change the name from Jet Set to Jet Grind either.
That seems like a weird choice because it's not different enough to be really different.
No.
But
it doesn't matter. Either way, it's pretty good. I will mention, you did talk about a sequel. Yes, there is an actual sequel. No one gets in our faces and says, well, there is a sequel. Yes, there is a sequel. It's good and it's better in some ways, and it also loses a little bit of the game's charm in other ways. It's derisive. Either some people love it, think it's way better. Some people are like, it's not Jet Set Radio, it's not as good. I mean, that's it. That's the perpetual argument between the two.
I mean, look.
It's worth checking out.
The visuals are changed, and that's a big part of the appeal, I think, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think the soundtrack's not as good overall, and it doesn't look the same, and they change the way you do the tagging. That's probably the least controversial change, because I think the tagging did have room for improvement.
Yeah, it kind of sucked, yeah.
So it's an interesting one. It's worth checking out if you do like the original.
Yeah. Speaking of the visuals, just a quick interlude here. This game here came out before Sonic Shuffle, which is also cel-shaded, and it's apparently tied with Slap Happy Rhyme Busters for the original PlayStation, which also came out on the 29th of June 2000.
Wow.
So that was the day for cel-shaded gaming. Maybe there are games that came out before that, but I couldn't find any.
What
so yeah, that's
age
that
to
was
be a, alive. Yeah.
Well, I definitely know cell shading would have been a technique that was available in pre-rendered CG.
Yeah, sure. I'm pretty sure it existed, but were there games that used it extensively?
There was cell shading in other games that before this. It's just they didn't look very good.
This one took the style as I was trying to say. Like it added aesthetic to the actual effect, so that it's people are like, oh, that looks good. Cell shading is good because they could see the potential of it because it had been well executed in this. It didn't just use it as hey, look, no textures, as a kind of thing. We do have to rank this, by the
way. Yeah, we got to rank it. All right, so, I don't know. I really have a lot of affection for this game, and I don't know why, because it's, like, compared to, like, say, Crazy Taxi, right, it's probably not as good, but it does have a lot of charm to it. And the music is way better.
One thing I would give this game here above Crazy Taxi is that I can play Crazy Taxi maybe for 20 minutes, half an hour, and that's fine, but I would play this game here longer.
I was kind of shocked that this game actually had, like, a full game's worth of content, to be honest. Like, I played it before, but I never finished it, and when I was sat down to actually finish it, it kept going to an extent. I was expecting, you know, maybe 6 stages or something, and then just repeating them. But instead, it's got, like, 10, 12 stages, essentially, and then there's a bunch of trials and extra stuff that you can do. Like, it's fully featured, yeah, in a way that Crazy Taxi has a bigger level or two, but
it's an arcade. That's an arcade game. This is like a way of, but it's got this arcade feel to it that feels very Sega to me, especially Dreamcast.
It feels very Sega. This is an absolutely Sega.
It is easily one of the in the top echelon of Dreamcast games to get if you want to get a Dreamcast and hope it doesn't like just completely break on you immediately. Works, yeah, but
This is definitely like I think in 2000 this was one of the Sega Dreamcast like crown jewels at the time. Most
yeah,
definitely.
I mean it's it no
like,
Blue Stinger, but it was up.
That's no Hellblade for sure.
Yeah,
is this better than the original Yakuza?
I think so. That's what I was looking at too. I was thinking, yeah, because the thing about Yakuza is that it's like Yakuza is, it's just an open.
This one here is
game.
Aged better.
This one is this is very much like more than the sum of its parts to an extent. Like no matter how frustrating individual bits have been and the weirdness of the floating and controls and lots of blurb and stuff, when you play it, you just all I want is this game to be even better than it is. Like
that's the
I'm just
thing.
Like
yeah.
Oh, I wish this was better. I'm still enjoying it. I still finished it. I really like I had a lot of fun. I'm like, ooh, if they had have just been able to take another crack at this specifically yeah, instead of changing
speaking,
it. Completely.
Speaking of being better, I would be happy to put this above Faxanadu on 166 because I don't know what Faxanadu is doing there in the first place, but it is there.
We had guests who really loved Faxanadu.
That is totally the most scientific you can be.
It's a scientific, and it's permanently correct. I'm looking at Ikaruga is below that at 170. God Hand is below that at 173. Saturday Night Slam Master is 174. I'm thinking about putting it between God Hand and Slam Masters. It's not really as good as God Hand is, because, I mean, nothing is...
God Hand is, like, mad refined in a way this game actually needed to be
It really refined. Did. It's like... And the sad thing is that you know that the code was cracked. Like, if they just had a little bit more of that Tony Hawk 2 kind of refinement to... the movement, you really could have done this, but they never got another chance because the Dreamcast, every Dreamcast on Earth caught fire and burned up all of Sega's money. So,
I think that's more than fair because, like, it's mainly like this game obnoxiously hates its own, like, self in a way. Like, the way that you kind of get smacked up in the stages, you've got these pain in the ass time limits. Why do you even have a life bar and a time limit? You know, you take fall damage. Like, there's all this stuff that's like, what was the point of that? Just
right.
To make it worse?
There was somebody in the room who said, just how about we just make this slightly less fun?
Yeah, you so can, below God can, Hand is fine with me.
Yeah, I mean, you can... Okay, so that's where it's going to go. Below God Hand, above Saturday Night Slam Masters, Jet Set or Grind Radio.
You got to do it properly. Jet Set Radio!
Jet Set Radio! Insert D-Light song here. Yeah, so like... It's crying out from the earth to be improved and fixed. And it's really like the saddest thing to me is that you've got a game like Mark Echo's Getting Up and stuff like that, where you can see like that game is like kind of half a game in a way because you really want to be doing something fun to get to the tagging spots. And it's like you look at a game like Mirror's Edge, which you can do the fun stuff, right? Like it's a lot like this game in a way, but you don't have to tag anything. So it's like if you combine those two, you'd have like a pretty good approximation of what this game could be like.
I think it's also important to note that this game was and remains quite popular, and I really don't think any game has cracked it as well. Which is weird, because we're obviously saying, you could totally improve it, hook the hook. But
yeah,
even people that, like, go, I love this game, I'm going to do better, kind of, it doesn't land, you know, struggle so much to get this game, but better.
It's in Windjammers territory in that respect, right? Like, you know, there's stuff you could do to Windjammers to make it even better.
Yeah, absolutely.
But no one's ever going to get around to it, so. Yeah, that's where it goes. Anyway, everybody should check out Jet Set Radio and get their, like you know, Y2K, Groove is in the Heart, that whole thing just needs to, it's just like, live it. Live the dream.
That's all for this episode. Special thanks goes out to our lovely co-hosts and compatriots, our booking agent Jeff Rude, our theme song MC Norm, check him out at Normally Retro on Twitter, and our technical assistant, video editor, and scriptwriter Ed Burns. You can support this podcast by making a small monthly donation at patreon.com/HG101. I know I did. By subscribing to the HG101 YouTube channel, and by following at GC9X and at HG_101 on Twitter. You can also hang out with us at our Discord channel. It's at bit.ly/HG Discord, but most importantly, help us spread the love of games by getting on iTunes, subscribing to HG101, and giving us a 5-star review. Do it because you like us and you want us to succeed. Until next time, keep keeping it real.